Good morning. I'm Kevin. I'm one of the pastors here on staff. It's great to see you. And if you brought a Bible with you, I would invite you to open to 1 Timothy chapter 6. We're going to be in there. We're in the middle of a series that we're calling Overflow, The Generous Life. We're going to talk about generosity this morning. And so we are going to do some different things this morning. You should have, and when you came in, received a piece of paper. It looks a lot like this. Well, I'm going to be addressing that in a little bit, so hold on to it. If you didn't get one, there's one at the tables. You'll have an opportunity to pick one up later. This opportunity of being generous has a tendency to fixate people in areas that sometimes causes a little angst as we talk about money, and that's okay, because we have to talk about money. And talking about money is not necessarily a bad thing. It's what we do with our money that matters. And you may have noticed, and I don't know if you've been paying attention or not, but there's a small jackpot out there to be won. Somewhere in the neighborhood, I heard of $900 million. I understand that nobody won. At least that's what they told me in the first service. Anybody here different? You won. Write a check. Let's go. No. And it could go to over $1.1 billion for if you're a single winner on the jackpot for Powerball. Talking about an excellent illustration of money. I'm going to ask you a question. I want you to take a pencil and write it down, not on that piece of paper, but somewhere on the bulletin. There's a blank spot in the bulletin. If you won the Powerball and got $900 million, what would you do with it? What would you do with it? You can't think hard, just got to write down. My first thought is I would, and write it down. All right, that's all the time you get. So you ever wonder what you'd do if you won $900 million? Came into a lot of money. People have been warned about instant wealth. I've talked to people that have won the lottery, children of people that have won the lottery, and they'll tell you it does something to them to win money. To instantaneously become rich isn't all it's cracked up to be. And I know what you're thinking. Just give me the chance. Just give me the chance. I can do this. I can do this better than anybody. Well, how are you at taking warnings? How do you do at, oh yeah, somebody said this, don't do this, but you have to find out for yourself. Even as kids, you know, did you listen to your parents the first time when they said, you know, the stove's hot, stove's hot, stove's hot, don't touch, don't touch, don't touch. Eventually you go, I got to see what hot is, right? And it burns. We don't heed warnings well. Maybe you do. Maybe you learn through everybody else's mistakes, but you would be the exception to the rule. Really, see, I was one of those kids, which you probably can imagine, was sitting in the back of the classroom as much as I could, and I would talk to people, and I would get warned, Kevin, quit talking. You ever been one of those kids? No, you were probably one of the other kids that was saying, shut up. Keep talking, you're going to be out in the hallway. Inevitably, who would end up in the hallway? Kevin, because he didn't heed warnings. When your parents warned you, did you always listen? When someone said to you, don't buy that car, they're nothing but problems, did you buy it anyway? See, I wish I had learned that one. Don't open that email. It'll give you a virus. Dang it. Don't use credit cards. Don't buy a car on credit. Save for retirement. Whatever you do, don't date that person. That's the wrong person. Right. Heed the warning. One of the ones I wish I had learned and listened to, it took me a couple of times to learn this lesson. Don't lend money to anyone unless you're willing to give it to them. I've damaged a couple of relationships lending money to people and thinking I would get it back, and I never got it back. My dad warned me, don't make money just to make money. Well, the Apostle Paul in 1 Timothy chapter 6 is setting out a warning. And he's sending out a warning for us, for the church, but he says it to his friend Timothy, and he wants him to pass it along. He wants him to tell people, look, there's a warning that comes with this. And we hear it, and we go, yeah, that's right, but does it really apply to me? And hear the warning. Hear these verses. 1 Timothy chapter 6, I'm going to read verses 6 through 10. It says this, but godliness with contentment is great gain. For we brought nothing into the world, and we can take nothing out of it. But if we have food and clothing, we will be content with that. Those who want to get rich fall into temptation and a trap and into many foolish and harmful desires that plunge people into ruin and destruction. Do you hear the warning there? Verse 10, for the love of money is a root of all kinds of evil. Some people eager for money have wandered from the faith and pierced themselves with many griefs. For those of you who are math-minded, I see an equation here. I see an equation called godliness plus contentment equals great gain. It's up here on the screen. It's in verse 6. It's Paul trying to explain the very principle of generosity. It is Paul trying to flash a warning, tell us, beware. Beware, because all that you have is not the fullness of who you are. Beware. But many times, especially in an affluent country, we confuse these things. And how you read this matters. How you understand what it means to be godly and what contentment is and what great gain is matters. How you define those terms ultimately turns this into a true statement or a false statement. And for many of us, we've been taught improperly what this means. You may have heard messages that say, if you live the right way and you do the right things, God is obligated to bless you financially. My friends, that is a lie. The gospel isn't about getting more financially. It's not a means of worldly wealth. Though you will be hurt, you will hear that. If you look at the verse just prior in 1 Timothy chapter 6, and in 1 Timothy chapter 6, the verse prior to that says this. It's verse 5. It says, and I'm going to just read the last, I'm sorry, I'm a little slow on the draw here. And it's in the context of him trying to teach about the love of money. And he says this, in constant friction between men of corrupt mind who have been robbed of the truth and who think that godliness is a means to financial gain. It is always turned on its head in Scripture. Godliness, being a Christian, being a follower of Christ, is not the inherent end as being that you will be financially blessed. What it means is that you have the opportunity to be amazingly generous. See, the wrong part of this equation that gets messed up is oftentimes what great gain is defined. When you hear great gain in your mind as Americans, we think money, financial blessing. We think, if I could just be godly and I could be content, then God will bless me. And when we think bless me, we think money. Allow me to unpack this for just a minute. I'm going to get into a little bit of a conversation of here is the differences between what we understand these words to mean and what they really mean. And the first one is godliness. Godliness does not equal morally correct behavior, being good. Contentment does not equal being patient. Great gain does not equal financial blessing. If you apply any one of those wrong definitions to those words into that equation, you get the wrong result. You get an untrue statement. And I want to unpack godliness for you quickly. And godliness is the key, actually, to this equation being true. And oftentimes, we as believers, we start connecting godliness with behavior because that is our measuring stick. If we just behave, if we just do the right things, then we would be godly, when in reality, godly is an attitude of the heart. Godliness is the manifestation of how you see and interact with God. It is about God. Three things, three aspects. If you're going to write anything down today, I want these are the three things I think I would really encourage you on that piece of paper to write down and ask yourself about them. Do a self-evaluation. Are you awed by God? Not ODD, AWED. Are you awed by God? Do you fear Him? Do you reverently fear God? Do you come into the presence of God with a sense of, I'm stepping into a place of holiness? Is there a understanding that we are the ones in need of a relationship with the one who made us? Do you realize that He initiated? Do you realize that He's the one that stepped into your space? Do you realize that He's the one that extended you an invitation in? And then when you step in, you go, oh, this is a holy God. This is awe-inspiring. See, how we see God matters. Because how we see God matters is the moment when we realize that this God is so much more than me, so much other than me, so much bigger than me, so much greater than me, and so much more holy than me. And He invites me into this relationship, and I'm awed. And it changes. That's the attitude of the heart towards the living, holy God, is awed. Are you awed? If you are not awed by God, then I question whether you've met Him, whether you truly met Him. Have you stepped into that place where you realize that the God who created you, knit you together, and put you on this planet, and put you in this place, and provides for your every need, wants relationship with you. And He is the one that says, man, I want relationship. And when you step into that relationship, you realize, ooh, this is much bigger than me. Because it changes my disposition. See, the first thing that will hinder generosity in the life of a believer is not being awed by God. Because you're more awed by yourself, or by human ingenuity, or by whatever it is that awes you, the next best thing, that you're not awed by God, then your God's way too small. And you are way too big. That's the first thing. You have to be awed by God, but then you also have to love God. There is a relationship that exists between us and God. And in that relationship, we begin to understand godliness is a overflow of our heart that comes from being awed by God, but then also understanding how much He loves us. See, generosity flows from love. It doesn't flow from obligation. Generosity flows from us not out of obligation, but because of love. And we begin to understand love through the lens of how we understand the love of God. We begin to understand the love of God when we understand the gospel. And the gospel is the precursor to this whole idea of us understanding that without God's grace towards us, without Him moving towards us, there's no initiative of love. And if there's no initiative of love by God, it becomes a duty-bound thing. And then what we end up doing is we end up doing just good things and we expect God to bless us. That's upside down. God has already done the good thing. God has already done what is necessary. And so we come into relationship with God because of Jesus dying on the cross, and we have relationship with Him, and He changes our heart. And now we begin to recognize His motivation towards us through love, and we step into this. We're awed by His holiness, and we are overwhelmed by His love and His action of love towards us, that we begin to see, oh, my attitude towards God is one, He's more than me. He's awe-inspiring. He is someone to be feared, but yet He loves me. And He steps into my life, and He redeems me, and it changes the way that I see God. Godliness, the third thing, is that it's all about my relationship with Him. It's desire for God. It's wanting Him to be my day in and day out part of my life. See, godliness isn't just what I do. It isn't my behavior. It's the expression of what my relationship with God is. So think about this for a minute. So if godliness is the attitude of my heart, and it is how I engage God, and it is the understanding of who God is, it's the understanding of how much God loves me, it is the understanding of my desire now to want to be in relationship with him, it is then becomes expressed through my life. It's integral to understanding the equation. See, because if you sit down and you go, godliness is good behavior, you will define then great gain as an obligation of God. What I mean by that is this. If I behave right, godliness, wrong thinking, and I'm content, then God will give me great gain. If that's the equation, then we can contrive generosity. It's not. Godliness is not that. So don't read that into it. So if you came in with the idea that godliness is just moral behavior, set it aside. Count that as false teaching. Count it as something you can set aside and now embrace what it really means to be godly. It is to have a right attitude towards God that is expressed in such a way that it brings about the possibility of contentment. See, we live in a world, a culture, a society that's built on the idea and the very, very foundations of its economy is that you will not be content. It used to be commercials on TV. Now it's ads on Facebook. Our culture is driven by the idea of presenting us with something that will make us be dissatisfied with what we have. Because what makes our economy work? Your money. I heard this story several years ago. I checked the origins of it. It's true. But you might not, some of you in the room might not get it. But anyway, back in the early parts of the 1900s, there was a company that built a factory down in Panama. Panama, South America. South Central America, Panama Canal. And in doing so, they needed workers, so they hired the locals. Now, the locals had never really worked for money on a big scale before. They had never, it was pretty much an agricultural economy. And so they hired them and paid them. Well, what happened is when they got their paychecks, they got more money than they had ever had in their entire lives, and they quit. Makes sense, right? Wow, this is more money I've ever had. Why do I need to keep going to this stupid factory? So the company got together and they said, how do we fix this? We got to fix this. These are good workers. We can't keep training people. This isn't working. And so the solution to the problem was this. They started handing out Sears catalogs with paychecks. Think about that. Those of you, anybody in the room know what a Sears catalog is? Thanks, Bob. I feel better now. Bob knew what a Sears catalog was. The idea was, if we could just give them an idea of what to spend their money on, they'll keep working. And do you know what? It worked. Because they bred discontentment in the hearts of the workers. Open a Sears catalog and there's boundless things to spend money on that they never even knew existed. Somewhere in the heart of even the person that's working in the middle of nowhere in Panama is the seed of discontentment. All it needed was a place to be channeled. It is the nature of human beings to be discontent. So what is contentment then? Contentment is that thing that says, I need the next thing. It is within us to say, I don't want what I have anymore. I want this instead. Last night, I was a little bummed, for lack of a better term. This settled on me in a new way, and I knew I had to preach on it today. Dang it. And so the conviction of the moment, our children have moved out of our house, and so silly me thought they would take a lot of their stuff with them. not too bright. But anyway, so we've been going through their valuable things that is left in our house. And as we go through them, we go, I gotta get rid of this, gotta get it. I actually gave a box to Bill Steinbrecher, our sound guy, to go through and say, do you want any of this valuable stuff? And so as we're doing this, there's stuff that's gonna end up in the garbage, there's stuff that's going to the Salvation Army, there's stuff that's going to you name it. So we're trying to figure this out. Give it away. We're just trying to leave. And as I was doing this and I was dwelling on what I was going to talk about today, and I thought, oh my word, this is the picture of discontentment. We had to have these things, and we spent money on them. And they were important for a day, 2 days. The illusion was that this would somehow build contentment. The illusion was, this'll work, this'll satisfy him for a day. See, it's an illusion, it's a picture. So I was kind of sitting there going, man, how much money did I waste over the years? How much money have I spent on things that just never satisfy? I ask you that question. It is the thing in us that says, I'll be happy with my 19-inch color TV and remote control. If I could just sit here and turn the channels, this would be great, right? Well, then some genius comes out with a 32-inch color TV, and I can move my 19-inch TV into my bedroom and watch my 32-inch TV. Pretty soon they're making 42 flat screens, and then they got 55s, and you know the story, right? I think we got 270s sitting on the wall back here. And all of that is, and then it just keeps going, and pretty soon you have high definition, you got 4D. I don't even know what 4D is. Do you need that? Somebody back, oh yeah, I got one of those. They curve the TV again. See, before, for a while, for those of you who are not as old, they used to curve the TVs backwards. Now they're moving them this way so you can see them better at angles. There's always a reason to buy the next thing. Always. You know, younger, you buy a Honda Civic and you go, this is great, my first car, drive around my Honda Civic, it gets good gas mileage. And somebody says, hey, you gotta try my Honda Accord. So you step into a Honda Accord and go, oh, this ride's better. It's got leather seats. This is nice. Stereo system's better. I got to have me a Honda Accord. Pretty soon you're driving a Honda Accord, and then, oh, there's a crossover that has four-wheel drive, and there's a lot of different, oh, I want one of those. And then pretty soon you're driving an Acura, and then the Lexuses look really nice. And pretty soon, where does it end? Does it end at Bentley? Does it end at Bentley? No, it ends at Maserati. Get this right. But where in the spectrum does contentment now move in and go, I really want my Civic? When it's paid for? Yeah. See, there's a bad answer to the question. See, I think sometimes we do this with God, and I just want to take you down one more path, and then I'm going to meander into another section of this, but it's to understand that godliness plus contentment equals great gain, and godliness is this attitude of our heart towards God. But if we don't have the right attitude towards God, and we believe that we can conjure up godliness in and of ourselves, and we can be content, and at the end of the day, if there's not a payday, if this doesn't come true, if we've put these equations back to back and we've done them incorrectly, we've defined the terms wrong, we will end up angry at God because he didn't bless us. It is rampant in evangelical circles to believe that somehow, some way, I can get God to bless me financially. It has become a hindrance to being generous. So a lack of contentment gets us to focus on ourselves, and not on others, or on God, because it's about me. And if your money is just about you, then I want to read for you another passage of Scripture. And it's found in Philippians chapter 2. See, as Christ followers, we are in essence saying our allegiance, our identification are with Christ. And if in fact the most godly people are the richest, the most godly people and most content people will be the most wealthy people, then it would follow that the one who was most godly would be most rich. Right? Is that bad logic, or did y'all just doze off? That's good. I at least heard some breathing out there. Then Jesus ultimately would be the most rich. I want to read for you the first 8 verses of Philippians chapter 2. Again, this is Paul writing. He's writing to the church, and he says, Therefore, if you have any encouragement from being united with Christ, being in relationship with him, having him, if any comfort from his love, if any common sharing in the Spirit, if any tenderness and compassion, then make my joy complete by being like-minded, having the same love, being one in spirit and of one mind. Do nothing out of selfish ambition or vain conceit. Rather, in humility, value others above yourselves. Not looking to your own interests, but each of you to the interests of the others. In your relationships with one another, have the same mindset of Christ Jesus, who, being in very nature God, did not consider equality with God something to be used to his own advantage. Rather, he made himself nothing by taking the very nature of a servant, being made in human likeness, and being found in appearance as a man. He humbled himself by becoming obedient to death, even death on a cross. See, generosity is on display there. Generosity from God, generosity from Jesus, both one and the same. He stepped down from glory. He had everything. He steps down and steps in and sought us and gave all. That's godliness. That's the picture of godliness. And it's the picture of contentment. And what's the great gain? What's the great gain? See, if you can't jump on the great gain, see, it's a transformed life, isn't it? It's a different way of looking at everything. It is living our lives without the worry of what's next. It is living our lives in expectation of what God is going to do through us. It is living in such a way that as Christ followers, we begin to recognize it's not about this world. Remember the warning. You brought nothing. You're leaving with nothing. When you stepped into this world, you came with nothing. And when you leave, nada. So you're passing through. And so this life of passing through should be a life of following Christ that resembles what he did. He gave his life away. He gave it all away. The first time I came to the realization of what that means was the first moment that I held my first child. It was so sobering to me. I had never loved anything so much to the realization that I would give everything I had for it. To love that much that you would give everything you have for it. See, I want to introduce you to Jesus, who gave everything he had for you. Wasn't just willing. He demonstrated his love for us by giving all, so that we might do the same. That's a different kind of life. It's not about me. See, too many times we live entitled lives. Not content lives. And we're very frustrated by the lack of compliance of the world around us to our entitlement. I deserve, if you ever find yourself saying the words, I deserve, you miss something along the way of what it means to be content. Because really what you deserve, you don't want. Really what we all deserve, we don't want. See, we ignore these very clear, very prominent warnings. Those who chase after the riches of this world will find themselves in heartache, often piercing themselves to the point where they wander from the faith. Some of the most miserable people I know are Christians who chase riches because they're looking for something in riches they will never find. I know. In the back of our minds is, Kevin, but you don't know me. When I get rich, I'm going to give a lot. When I find my pot at the end of the rainbow, that's, you know, when I get, I have that lottery ticket. I'm winning the $1.1 billion. It won't ruin my life. You ever done a study of what happens to people who win the lottery? It's tragic. I've talked to people who have won the lottery. I've talked to children of people who have won the lottery. It's not happy. See, if you're not content with what you have now, you won't be content with 900 million. Because contentment is a place that you come to knowing the truth about our God. That he's trustworthy and he'll meet your needs. That he loves you more than you love yourself. He loves you more than you love your kids. And he changes the way we live. See, I think we miss the point of generosity and all these things get in our way. I'll be generous when I have more. I used to think that. I'll be generous when I have more money. This isn't about the amount. If you're thinking that we are doing this series so that somehow, some way you will give more money to this church, you've missed the point of the series. We're doing this series so that you begin to understand that in a relationship with an awe-inspiring God who is completely and utterly generous with us, that he rescued us and saved us. He says, come, join me in this abundant life, and it's generous. You become so generous. Because really, 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 you came with nothing, and you're leaving with nothing. So you might as well do with what I gave you all you can for somebody beside yourself. I'm going to walk you through what we're going to do next. And what we're going to do next is a little bit different. We've never done anything like this. I'm going to ask the band to come up here with me. And we're going to do three songs. And those three songs are going to take about 15 minutes. We still have time. You know, I know you're thinking, wait a minute. This is almost, no, we still have time. And we're going to post what those songs are up here. And my prayer is for all of us in the room, those are the three songs. So if you like one of those particular songs, take note. That's the order they're going to come in. Okay? And part of our engagement with God, part of our relationship with God is worship. And we live our lives out of worship. And what I want you to do is sing this morning. I want you to sing to a God that you're awe-inspired by, that you love deeply, that you desire to have a deep relationship with. The second thing I want you to do is take that piece of paper and write one word on it or a little bit of word on it that this. It's an act of confession. We, as followers of Christ, need to be active in our confession. And it's worship to confess. What is the one thing? And if you want to write more than one, I'm okay with that. But I would prefer that you focus on one. One thing that God has laid on your heart this morning during this time that you need to confess that keeps you from being generous. Generous with your time, your money, your resources, your stuff. Okay? And the third thing I want you to do is give. You may have never given any money to this church, and that's fine. I'm not asking for hundreds of dollars. I'm asking you to respond to God in a way that you give. And we have a bunch of different ways that you can give. One of them is called our Compassion Fund. It helps people in need. None of that money really goes to the function of this church. If you don't, for whatever reason, are skeptical of us and skeptical of Jesus and skeptical of whatever it is that we do, one thing that you can give to this morning, I don't care if it's $5 or a buck, give something to help somebody else. That's what it means to be generous, is to take what you've got and give it so someone else is blessed. You can give to our Global Missions Project. We do stuff all over the world. You just have to write there. That's what we're going to do. That's what I would like to do. Our facilities, if you like our building and want to see it better, give to that. Or our ministry fund. As an act of worship, an act of trust, an act of saying to God, look, I've got something I can give. And I want to be part of something bigger. And I want to be generous. Again, hear me say this. It's not the amount that you give. It's the act of worship. And I don't want you to give anything because you feel guilty. I want you to feel loved by God and give. Because we have a generous, generous God. Now, around the room, there are tables. And on that piece of paper, what I'd like you to do, don't fold the piece of paper after you write whatever it is on there. I just like to litter these things with the papers. And don't put your name on it. No one wants to know what you're confessing. Only you and God want to know what you're confessing. And there's tables in the back, there's tables in the middle, and there's tables up front. And then give. Now, if you said, man, all I got is a credit card, I'm good with that. No, I'm dead serious. There's a kiosk in the back. You can give back there, right straight back there. Also, you can text it. There's a texting number in the bulletin on the back. And you will, if you've never texted in your offering before, I've done it before, you text it in and you'll get an email back of confirmation. So you do have to have a smartphone and you do have to enter a card number into that. It's safe. It works. I've done it. I can tell you I've given through texting. All that to say, it's not, again, the amount. It's the generous heart. It is the attitude of godliness. It is the contentment with what you have. And we invite, now, don't everybody get up at the same time, because we've got time. We've got 15 minutes to do this. And so if you want to sing the first song, sing the first song. If you want to sing the second one, third one, whatever. But there will be music going on. There will be activity taking place. You'll be able to move around freely. But it's an act of worship. We want you to join in to what it means to be generous. And I'll come up and close the service after the songs.